Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live, and you are invited to take control of the airwaves and talk about whatever is important to you. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to do that. Again, the number 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki, and Bonnie.
And I want to invite you to join our chat server. You can find it at chat.freetalklive.com. If you want to hang out with some of the hosts there, that's the best way to do it, and in mostly real time, although not all the hosts are active all the time. Some of the hosts aren't even on there, I don't think, and some of them just choose to ignore it, like myself. I tend to ignore the chat more often than not because they like tagging me, and I mean, they're trolls. So the vast majority of people on the server are trolls, and
they're charming people.
Some of them are not very good at it. And
well, I joined it just yesterday just to post the link, and nobody replied to the link, so I left.
The chat server?
Yeah, and they're always asking me to join.
You joined the on-air now room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, are you talking about something else?
That's one room on the Matrix server.
Oh, yeah, my bad. I joined On Air Now, which is like supposed to be the main hub about talking about what's going on Free Talk Live.
But it's never about what's going on the show. Unless, I can't believe it. Like, you dropped an F-bomb earlier, and I can't believe it. The chat still has not mentioned it. I can't believe it. I'm stunned.
They must just not be listening today.
I don't know. They do listen to the show, just like, you know, our trolls on YouTube listen to the show. They don't talk about the show, but they're clearly listening to it. I can't believe it. None of them commented on it. It's remarkable. But let's go to the phones. We have Chuck on the line from Washington. Chuck, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah. I mean, racism, isn't that kind of a weird thing?
It is weird to be
really
racist.
Is. Huh?
It is weird to be racist.
I mean, it's kind of weird, right? But there is some evolutionary advantage to this categorization and classification of things, right? Like, it's discriminatory of me to assume that a random bear in the woods is going to kill me if I try to pet it, right?
That's racist.
I am discriminating against that bear by assuming that it's going to be vicious. But if I wasn't making that assumption, I would be dead. All the human beings not capable of making that assumption would have been killed by bears, and evolution would have gotten rid of that inability to make that categorization.
But we're also, like, evolved enough to know the difference between, in consciousness, between a bear who literally is living off instincts and a human being who isn't.
That's the critical distinction, certainly.
But an assessment, survival assessment, like, type of a thing that's going on there. This bear won't kill me like a Mexican guy will.
What does that mean?
Is that what we're talking about? I don't even know. I really don't know.
No.
Let me tell you about one of the weirdest racist kind of experiences that I had was in Seattle, Washington, when all of the Chaz and Chop thing was happening there. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was autonomous zones.
Yeah, so liberals, some Black Lives Matter advocates, I seem to recall, took over a portion of the city and called it a special autonomous zone.
I don't think it's accurate enough to say it was just Black Lives Matter. There was a lot of stuff going on there. I mean, a lot of stuff. Separatist people, like the, what do they call it? The Cascadia movement people there.
I don't know, man. I didn't follow it that closely. I'm not from Washington. And it's just some random city.
The Cascadia movement is these people that believe that the western portion of Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and Canada should be its own country. But anyway, One of the most racist things that I saw was a bunch of white people that were all dressed in black that surrounded themselves around Capitol Hill, the football field they have there. There's like a, at the center of where all that protest happened in 2020, there's a ball field there.
In Seattle?
Yeah.
Okay.
A ball field, and it's surrounded by a mixture of residential, high density residential areas. So you've got...
Sure, it's in the middle of a suburb.
Right. And then they just took that over. So all these white people on Juneteenth in 2020, all these white people dressed in black decided that they were going to surround the football field at CHOP and not let anybody in if they were not black.
That's
now,
weird.
That's racist.
Yeah,
it is. It's probably one of the more racist things that I've ever seen. And I couldn't believe that they were taking... It was...
Wait, so what was the purpose? What was the purpose of that?
I think it was to try to shock people into making them feel like what it was like to be excluded. But
sure, but I mean, those white people who were doing that had no idea what that felt like either.
Yeah, exactly. It was so stupid.
My father has told me stories about when he was growing up, when segregation was like, and they had, you know, the black people had to sit in one part of the building and the white people sat in another. But, like, that was the South then, and that was the only reason it was going on, that was the only reason it carried on as long as it did, versus Seattle, where it probably never existed in the first place, and if it did, certainly didn't persist into the 60s.
Well, the Pacific Northwest does have its variation of racism, but...
Well, so does New Hampshire, but it's very, very different to say that, you know, the black people in New Hampshire have common struggles with the black people in Mississippi. These are very different areas with very different histories.
Absolutely. I think that needs to be talked about when you're in an intellectual conversation about racism and classism, I guess you could call it. I don't know.
Yeah, there are certainly a lot of important things to discuss on the matter. Thank you so much for the call tonight, Chuck. I mean, I don't have the answers, and I don't like thinking of people in terms of groups and categories. And I don't even like thinking of, you know, black people or white people. I prefer to think of people as people, individuals with characteristics. And sure, maybe some of them share certain characteristics and maybe some of them don't. But those characteristics don't define them. And individuals can always be different from whatever stereotypes exist surrounding people with those characteristics. Like, we mentioned this during the last break, people always assume that I'm a liberal, that I'm a Democrat. Like, I don't even have to speak. When I go to the anti-free state rallies here in Keene, you can see the visible confusion on these people's faces when they try to figure out what my politics are, because they see me and they go, oh, I need to hand this person a sign. Wait a minute, this person has a sign that talks about freedom.
Why could a trans person want to be free?
That was one of the things I mentioned recently to the documentary crew who was out here for the Crypto 6 film, which is currently in the works. They were talking about the problems that free staters and libertarians seem to have appealing to minorities. And I was like, well, libertarians are bad salesmen. That's all there is to it. We're terrible at selling the ideas of liberty. He goes, well, what do you mean? I was like, how can you fail to reach a black person in the United States with the history that black people in the United States have had? How do you fail to reach them with the ideas of liberty? Like, you could not possibly be a worse salesman than to find someone who's dying of starvation and be unable to sell them a burger, right? And that's what libertarians are in the United States. We're surrounded by people dying of starvation, and we're going, why the hell can't we sell a cheeseburger? Because we're terrible at selling cheeseburgers.
I thought during the Black Lives Matter movement at the beginning, I literally got an invitation. I don't even remember who it was from. Like, somebody telling me I should go to the Black Lives Matter protest in San Antonio. They said it was an anti-cop protests and memorial for George Floyd. And I was all about that. I was like, wow, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're getting rid of the cops, like I've been saying since way before these people. And I'm really excited for this. And I went there, and everything was just like people talking about how black people were oppressed, and it was nothing about, like, we should have, that should have been the moment that everybody got together, all of us citizens, quote unquote, I don't like that word, against the oppressors, no matter what color they are, no matter what color we are. But it was completely co-opted. I still to this day believe that people from out of town came to make that protest something that it originally wasn't. It was going to be, wow, cops are killing people, let's go protest cops. And people, I know San Antonio very well. It's just like there was people that were not from there. You just dress a certain way. You know, if you live somewhere long enough, you know how people are, you know what they look like. You're like, why have I never seen you? I literally do nothing but drive around San Antonio all day. And how come I don't see this many young people even? It's just like people who definitely weren't from there showed up just to talk about, make it something that it wasn't. I really think that the reason that it's hard to sell libertarianism to everyone is because the minorities are hardcore targeted for government propaganda, so that way they see themselves as, you know, like, they see themselves as they need the government to help. Not that all of them do, I'm just saying that the goal is to get them to see themselves as needing the government, or else the average white person will just, you know, oppress them. And they are being sold that so hard that it's hard to get through to it for all the people who, like me and you and Nikki and people, most people on Free Talk Live, I'd say, are more common sense about the subject. Like, I think a lot of libertarians are just conservatives that think they're libertarians. So there's that in its own layer. I don't think anyone on Free Talk Live is like that. But
I don't know. Mark is really close at times.
I forgot about Mark. Well, he's not 100%.
No, but I mean, he can get pretty close, though.
Yeah, well, he's starting to turn into just a straight-up statist. But
he's going to be, I mean, pretty soon he's going to be listening to Fox News, watching Fox News, man. Fox News and reading The Guardian or whatever, the Daily Mail. That's it.
The Daily Mail.
Pretty soon, man. It's coming, Mark.
I've been saying for a long time that, like, if the Free State Project movement turns into, oh, we all agree that taking kids to trans or taking kids to drag shows is grooming and that type of person, I literally don't want to be a part of it, and you guys can't have Ian anymore.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I wouldn't be a part of such a group anyway, right? Because, I mean, I'm one of these trans people. But we do have this.
Not you guys. Right. I meant them.
Yeah, but we do have that issue where trans people are told that you're not really trans. As you mentioned, you're not really queer unless you're a Marxist, according to this one person. I've literally been told that I'm not part of the collective because I'm a libertarian. And they capitalized collective with a capital C, by the way. It was like, how dare you go against the collective or something. I don't remember the exact way they put it, but it was basically, look, how dare you think for yourself? And, like,
it's just so gross. It's such a gross.
Yeah, the crux of
mentality. It's
transgenderism,
like,
is individuality. That I should be able to express myself and be an individual however I choose, whatever lines of society that happens to cross. But as long as it doesn't cross those political lines.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, the people that you can tell are just conservatives pretending to be libertarians, they have jumped on this groomer thing so hard because for the longest time, they've been anti-gay people, anti-trans people living their own lives, but they couldn't really say anything because they couldn't think of a way that impacts them personally, so they just had to not say anything. But this was an invention of the media to make it to where people can be more, to make it to where
bigoted.
People can be more bigoted and separated because now they've given the conservatives this idea it affects them because it affects my children. And then they're like, okay, yeah, now I can just be a straight up bigot because I found a way to make it seem like I'm being oppressed by gay people existing. Finally, we've done it. We have our racist card. And it's groomers.
And isn't the evidence, like, completely clear at this point that these people who are upset about this have never seen a drag show?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And they may have seen clips of some adult drag shows on the internet, but they've never actually been to a drag show, much less one that markets itself as family friendly.
I mean, clearly not. I actually don't remember this, but my family members have told me stories of when I was 5 years old, there were drag queens at a family party, and I was dancing with them. I've always loved to dance. You know, we were having a great time. I probably didn't realize that they were men dressed in women's clothing. Like, I didn't know what a drag queen was, right? But I wasn't traumatized by it. They didn't try to molest me or anything. Like, it was totally fine, wholesome fun. There were no dildos involved. Like, it was just normal. So I don't really understand why there's just this huge controversy over it.
The best example I've seen, the best explanation that I've seen, was on the TikTok video that we posted about the drag queen discussion, where someone pointed out that, you know, drag queen entertainment is just like any other form of entertainment. You wouldn't take your kids to go see, you wouldn't take your 6-year-old to see Halloween Ends, right? But you would take them to go see Frozen 2 or whatever. Well, some drag shows are on the Halloween Ends kind of things, where they're for adults only, or on the Basic Instinct kind of thing, where you may see Sharon Stone flash the entire audience. Mm-hmm. Some of them are on that side of things, but some of them are on the Frozen side of things, where they are family friendly. And to equate all drag shows as being family friendly or family unfriendly because, you know, Halloween Kills isn't for kids, and that means all movies are bad for kids. It's fundamentally not how that form of entertainment is. And it's obvious when you think about this in that context, because I can think of a lot of music that I wouldn't necessarily encourage a 5-year-old kid to listen to.
Right.
But I can think of plenty of music that I would say, hey, 5-year-old kid, here. Like, I wouldn't hand a 5-year-old kid the latest Tool album and be like, here you go, kid, you're welcome.
Here's some Cannibal Corpse.
Huh. I chose Tool for a very specific reason. It's not because they have profane lyrics or adult themes or anything like that. It's just, it's overly complicated
stuff
that a 5-year-old kid would not be. They want to sing Happy Birthday and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and very simple little melodies like that. So Tool has no appeal to them whatsoever. So obviously music isn't bad for 5-year-olds. Just because, you know, I could give a 5-year-old Cannibal Corpse or Gwar or whatever. I wouldn't do that, but, you know, I could. And you wouldn't say, well, the music is rotting the brains of 5-year-olds or turning them into, you know, kitten-eating Satan worshippers or whatever it is. Insert whatever kind of crazy conspiracy theory you have. Because it's just a form of entertainment. And like any other form of entertainment, it can be everything from rated G to rated triple X.
There's a spectrum.
Even within an artist, like, I showed my little brother when he was 5 Lady Gaga because we watched her Super Bowl halftime performance together. I turned on the TV only for that part, then turned it off. And he was like, wow, I love Lady Gaga after that. So I showed him Lady Gaga, but I wouldn't show him certain songs because she has some songs about masturbation and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's the case with everything, right? Some of it's family friendly and some of it isn't, and some ideas are good and some of them isn't. And we're talking about bad ideas here, particularly those from the government, and not all of them are terrible ideas, but even the ones that are good ideas seem to be implemented badly because it is the government. But again, I'm torn on the matter because I feel like the government should have its feet held to the fire. Like, if the government's going to put people in prison, then yes, they have to have a 100% pro-trans policy about trans inmates. Well, I'm sorry, you're the government, you're the one putting people in prison, therefore, you should have this policy that is most tolerant and accepting toward the people that you're putting in prison, because you're not giving them a choice. So, another NASA manual identifies the words, quote, America is a melting pot, and don't you want a family, as microaggressions.
Wait, what? What did that mean?
Yeah, where is that from?
America is a melting pot, and don't you want a family?
Yeah, two separate quotes.
Oh, okay.
America is a melting pot is one quote, and don't you want a family is another quote. Both of them are considered microaggression. I assume microaggression at this point basically just means an annoying statement or an annoying question.
What is America being a melting pot rude to anyone about? I can't think of anyone that that's rude to.
I think the idea is that a person should come here and lose their cultural identity. And
I thought it was just that we all mix together. Like, if you melt things in a pot, it doesn't become...
Right, but if you melt cheese in a pot, like it stops being cheese, and it becomes...
Yeah, but if you melt cheese and meat in a pot, it's just cheese and meat mixed together, and it's delicious and nice. Not...
Yes, but you no longer have a slice of cheese when you do that. Or whatever form of cheese it is.
If you marry someone from a different culture, your kids are going to end up mixed. They're going to be speaking mixtures of languages. They're going to literally be mixed in color. They're going to...
Right. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that's what they're saying is that, you know, if you melt all of these ingredients together, you might have a great soup, but you no longer just have an individual carrot or an individual potato or
whatever. That's evolution. That's moving, you know, people getting together, people, you know, voluntarily exchanging ideas and cultures. I love that. That's one of the best things about life.
But don't you want a family one is super annoying?
Yeah. That one is annoying. So about the microaggressions, pretty much a microaggression can be literally anything. About, like, maybe a year ago, one of my friends was in college, and it was during COVID times, so it was online, so I was sitting there listening to her lecture, and they were talking about microaggressions.
Oh, good.
And the rhetoric was very concerning, because essentially, like I just said, anything can be considered a microaggression.
It sounds like, from this article, it sounds like a microaggression is basically just an annoyance.
Right? Not even. It's just literally anything that someone might possibly disagree with or be offended by is a microaggression.
Okay, so that's literally everything, because I've seen people get offended over some really non-offensive stuff.
Yeah, it's literally everything is a microaggression, and that's why... You know, at first glance, microaggressions, it's like, okay, yeah, I could see, like, what the real definition of microaggression could be and how that's problematic, but, you know, per usual, these people take it too far, and now everything's a microaggression, everything's offensive, and it just dilutes the meaning and the substance of the true concept.
A third lists perfectionism. And data is king as examples of common leadership mistakes. I'll give you perfectionism. That perfectionism is bad, right? The perfect is the enemy of the good, as they say. If you're always aiming for perfect in something, you're never going to complete anything. This was why my music input, my output stopped, dropped to zero a number of years ago, because I had this mentality that every song I put out had to be my best song ever. Which it had to be better than the previous song. Otherwise, I would scrap it and start over. And I've seen videos of YouTube creators who fell into the same mindset. And once you start doing that, you inevitably reach a point where you stop producing anything at all because you're holding yourself to too high of a standard and you're squeezing your own creative energies dry as a result of that. You don't need to create a perfect song or a perfect video. Sometimes you just need to create a song or create a video. So I understand why perfectionism would be a problem. I don't know about data is king. Data, I don't know.
I don't know what that means.
It probably has something to do with Mark last night saying that fact is racist or however we got into that. I don't remember the specifics there. That has something to do with Chris Cantwell, apparently. I suspect that's what that's coming from. There's more about this and the U.S. government and its strange diversity training. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
You USA News update. Into the night for the House, after three more rounds this afternoon, couldn't solve the Speaker's stalemate. Kevin McCarthy is getting the most Republican votes, but still short of the 218 needed. Former President Donald Trump weighing in says House Republicans need to get the vote for Speaker over with. In an interview with Fox News, Trump said the GOP House members opposing McCarthy's bid for House Speaker are playing a, quote, dangerous game. President Biden says he has spoken with the parents of Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin at length. The Bills say Hamlin remains in the intensive care unit in critical condition with signs of improvement in his health. Hamlin was injured during a football game Monday night. Stars from the Marvel Cinematic Universe are sending their best wishes to Jeremy Renner. The actor was recently injured after a plow ran over him while he was attempting to help a stranded family member stuck in the snow. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live, and you can join us. 603-283-6160, if you'd like to do that. Again, that number is 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki, and Bonnie.
And I think this is all of our second experience with the new format of the show.
Yep.
No, it's my third, actually, because I was also on tonight's. What do the two of you think about it? I'm still enjoying it. It gets the show a much stronger flow, and less breaks means more engaging conversation. We've definitely gotten deeper into topics tonight than we normally
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. It caught me off guard on Sunday because I forgot it was happening. Okay. And then the first segment,
I didn't think to warn anyone.
I was just like, wow, we're still doing this, huh?
Yeah, I was like that the first night as well. And I looked up, I was like, all right, it's time for that 7:15 break or whatever. I was like, oh,
no,
yeah,
no, we're not doing that.
7:15
yeah.
break.
You know, I really like it. I think that a lot of the times I feel unhappy with my day before. I don't think about it a lot, but if I ever feel like, oh, I don't like how I was on Free Talk Live yesterday, it's because, like, I feel like I could have said that better. And, you know, when you have more time to think out what you're saying, instead of feeling really rushed to just get it out perfectly the first time, it's like, I can be like, yeah, well, I said that, but I kind of mean it like this, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then once there's the commercial break, we've moved on from that, you know, so it's not like we rarely circle back and it's like, let me clarify what I said. Sometimes we do that, but rarely, or you don't think of it.
Yeah, you're way past it on a different subject.
Yeah, it's like we're talking about something different or, you know, we've moved on.
Well, obviously, both of you always feel free to bring it back to clarify something you said earlier. God knows I'll do it. Like, I said something earlier, but I misspoke, and let me be more precise, because you're absolutely right, Bonnie. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize this. I mean, there's no editing going out here. This is live broadcast. When I speak, it's being played over like 160-ish. We lost some stations recently with this, which like 160-ish radio stations throughout the United States, as well as on satellite radio. I mean, I don't know if it's satellite radio. It's satellite and on the internet and various other places. And people are going to download this podcast tomorrow, and they're going to listen to it. And there's been no editing to it whatsoever.
I mean, people could be listening to it years in the future, too. Like, I listened to some 2006 ones when Ian was in jail because I was just like, yep. Vintage Ian.
And there's very little prep. There's prep in the sense that, I mean, a lot of people think, what do you mean you guys don't prep for the show? It's like, that's not what Free Talk Live is, and that's not what it's ever been. We bring in articles to talk about, and we call it show prep, right? And a lot of the times, true, we don't read these articles. We get a gist of them sometimes, and sometimes we don't even do that if it just seems like an interesting topic. Like this one here, I didn't read this article beforehand, but the point of the show prep isn't, it's supposed to be improvisation. How do you prepare for improvisation, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the same question every improv comic has to ask, and we're improv talk show hosts. Like, you can't sit down and write a script and prepare for that. You just,
especially because we're open phones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right? I have no idea what this lunatic from New Mexico named Sarah is about to talk about, but she is on Free Talk Live with us. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yes, I just wanted to bring up the lie detector. I have seen a lie detector show on PBS last night, and I really thought it was really intriguing. So the conclusion of the matter is that it does work. I mean, they still use
sometimes.
It.
Sometimes.
Like, I mean, it's based on science. I mean, what is your opinion on it?
Well, I think, I don't know exactly what they use, but I'm assuming they use things like heart rate, maybe?
They're certainly going beyond the polygraph at this point. The polygraph has been proven to have an accuracy of only like 60-70%.
Really? And so what do they use to...
Well, it's not admissible in court. The polygraph isn't.
No, I know.
But like... I don't like any sort of technology that erases the human element. I don't like mind-reading technology or anything in that direction. I don't like lie detection technology. But there's this game called BS, right? It's a card game. And basically, you end up having to tell a lie to the people you're playing. I don't remember exactly the rules, but my family played this at family gatherings. And my grandmother, it did not matter if me or my sister tried to tell a lie while playing this game, bam, caught every single time.
Because she knows your physical cues and, you know, your behaviors.
Flawlessly so.
And I feel the same way about my little sister. I would always know when she was lying because she's just... bad liar. I'm a much better liar than her.
My grandmother, she had it. I don't know what tales we had, but she knew every single time before we would even open our mouth. She was like, BS, and that was the end of it. And I like that aspect. I don't like how good she was at it, but I like that human aspect of it, that poker playing aspect of it.
Yeah.
You have to be able to read people and assess them and all of that. The ambiguity, the uncertainty, I fear a world where your deepest thoughts, your truest intentions, whatever, can be laid out for the whole world to see whether you like it or not.
Yeah, and I don't know I was just going to say, I don't know how the polygraphs work, but I know, you know, people, like, through meditation and in certain thought techniques, people can lower their heart rate, and, you know, monks can take a soaking towel and dry it in seconds. I don't know if that's real, but, you know,
You're talking about the Wim Hof type of stuff, right?
Yeah, I was saying Wim Hof. I never heard that about drying a towel. That's crazy and weird.
I had heard something about that when I was in high school. It was like these
Buddhist
monks
body heat?
who would do very similar things to Wim Hof, where they would go out into the wilderness and, like, into the snowy wilderness wearing only a wet towel. And after, maybe not a few minutes, but after not long, the towel would be completely dry and they would maintain warmth.
Yeah, like with the monks, like, you can see steam coming off of the towels. So if people can do things like this, then I'm sure they can cheat a polygraph.
Certainly. Well, that's why it's not admissible in court, right? If it's wrong even 1% of the time, then you could lead to a false conviction. And you can't have that, right, Sarah? Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I mean, let's say if you were accused of, let's say if you really committed a crime, okay, and then they threatened that you tell me the truth, what happened to you, or we're going to put you on this lie detector test, what would you say? Would you lie to them and put you on a lie detector, or would you tell the
truth? You have to consent to being on a lie detector test, so I would say... Nothing. I want to talk to a lawyer. That's what you should always say.
Let me reverse that question a bit, Sarah. They say you did not commit this crime. You did not do it. You know you didn't do it. But they put you up to a polygraph test, which you agreed to take because you didn't do anything wrong. Why should you be afraid of a polygraph test? You're telling the truth. But you fail that polygraph. No. Let me finish the freaking question, Sarah. But you fail the polygraph test. What then?
Okay, why would you... failed the polygraph test.
It's based on science. She just watched a propaganda show last night, and now she's just convinced that, oh, it's based on science, and polygraphs can never be wrong, and she that's what happened. Sarah watched something on PBS.
Yeah.
She said.
And if they're even wrong 1% of the time, if you're that unlucky, you know, 1 out of 100, then you're going to jail forever for something you didn't do.
Well, I don't know how they do it, but it is used in court. What I gather is that most of the time it's a good detection that you're lying. So it is being
most of the time is not good enough, Sarah.
Maybe I'm Maury.
We don't have a court system where you have to be mostly convinced that the person is guilty. You have to be completely convinced beyond a shadow of reasonable doubt. And the polygraph test, which is the most common lie detector test, I'm assuming the documentary that you watched went a little bit beyond the basic polygraph test because that's 1960s type stuff, and it's known to be inaccurate. I'm looking for the numbers here, and I got to tell you, I just can't find it. I just can't find an example, a percentage of how often the lie detector, the polygraph test is wrong. You would think a freaking Google result of how often are lie detector tests wrong would lead exactly to the number that you're looking for.
Well, they're obviously doing propaganda, and Google's propaganda, you know. So I could see them hiding that.
Here it is. I was not on Google. I was at Brave's default search engine, and it was... there have been several reviews of polygraph accuracy, Sarah. They suggest that polygraphs are accurate between 80 and 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That means 10 to 20% of the time, they're wrong.
That one out of 10 is a lot if you're getting convicted of something you didn't do.
Well, I mean, but that's only a part of it. I mean, they're going to have witnesses and other people, the DNA test, the fingerprints.
Well, what if somebody's like you and just believes, I watched a show on PBS and now I think that polygraphs are 100% right all the time and it's based on science and now I'm going to convict them and I'm on the jury.
Well, and you have to admit, so if you're a member of the jury, if anyone's a member of the jury, if someone fails a polygraph, you know, even myself, if somebody failed a polygraph, it might be like, well, you know, that seems pretty accurate, you know.
Yep.
That would definitely change the jury's mind from innocent to guilty.
Because I don't think the prosecutors would be allowed. The defense attorney would say, no, you're not allowed to call this a lie detector. And the judge would say, I agree, you're not allowed. But they would say, this is a polygraph detector that is used to determine whether or not someone is being deceitful. They would say something along those lines. That they would get as close to saying it's a lie detector as possible without, you know, making the judge angry. And they would say something to the effect to that. But 10 to 20% of the time, Sarah, you're going to end up with someone who did not commit the crime going to jail because the polygraph test was wrong.
Well, I mean, it's still a good tool.
It's a terrible tool. Here's a hammer. 10% of the
time. Before they stick me on that machine.
Here's a hammer. 10% of the time is going to blow up and take your hand off. That's not a good tool, Sarah.
If it even ruins one person's life where they have to go to prison for something they didn't do...
throw the whole justice system away.
Exactly. I mean, we should already do that, but...
Yeah.
Definitely don't use a polygraph in court when someone's life is at risk.
I agree entirely. But I mean, I don't know what else we would expect from Sarah, who is on the record as saying that she supports the death penalty, even though she
knows. No, I don't know that.
She does. She supports the death penalty. And get this, she knows. She will admit. She's done it on the air. She will admit that there are people who are wrongfully convicted of crimes in American prisons. And she knows, we've got her to agree to this on the air, that with the death penalty, it means some number of people killed by the government will be innocent. And she's okay with that, because we'll still occasionally kill an actual murder.
Well...
And she's admitted that on the air multiple times. I'm not putting some weird spin on it. She has admitted that multiple times in those exact terms. She knows what she's saying when she says it. So I'm not at all surprised that she's fine with the polygraph test being wrong 10 to 20%.
I know, that's pretty mild compared to murdering people for things they didn't do.
Is that like a normal communist...
I don't think so.
It wouldn't seem like it to me. It doesn't seem leftist to me to be, you know,
I mean, like, true communism, like China and Cuba and stuff like that. Like, yeah, absolutely. They totally can get down with that. But I think the, like, the American, like, what's the word I'm trying to use? Like, the glorified American communism. Like, we're all going to have free food. And
democratic socialism.
Yeah, whatever. Democratic socialism. Like, those people... I don't think that they would
normally
agree with Sarah.
Cops killing people.
See, I'm against the death penalty. I'm 100% against the death penalty. The state should not be able to condemn anyone to death. And this includes people who aren't American. So they shouldn't be able to have war. They shouldn't be able to drop bombs. They shouldn't be able to point at someone and say, I think it's time for you to die. They should not have power over life and death. Full stop. End of story.
Yeah.
However, I argue that a person who's been convicted of a crime in a jury should be able to request the death penalty.
Well, I think anyone should be able to request to not be alive anymore if they want to.
I agree entirely.
Criminal or not, if you don't want to be alive anymore, then that's your decision. It's literally your life.
Right. I'm with you 1,000%. And the criminal justice system, it denies them that. It keeps people from killing themselves, right? So people, Jeffrey Epstein, whether or not he did or didn't kill himself, he had the right, I would argue, to kill himself.
Yeah.
It's my life, right? What more fundamental right could I have than to end it if it's mine? The idea that I can't end it suggests that my life isn't mine, it's yours. Other people have authority over me. And I'm not suicidal or any means, don't get me wrong. However, if someone is convicted of a crime and they choose to kill themselves, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be allowed to do
that. A lot of people would say that living the rest of your life in prison, not on your own terms, without any freedom, is worse than death. Like, I mean, it's like what John Stark said, there are more evil things than death.
Yep. And it's certainly, and I don't mean, you know, someone who gets convicted and they get sentenced to life prison and they say, okay, well, I want to be put to death. I don't mean giving them 40 years of death row. I mean, take them out the next day and put a bullet at them, right? Like, let them die as quickly and efficiently as they want. At that point, they requested to die. So, I mean, don't torture them to death or anything, but like, bullet back in the head, problem solved. Because it would be better, I think, to be dead than to live an entire life in prison. Now, I understand you would want to have some level of restraint on this, right? You wouldn't, okay, this person's going to prison for 3 years or 5 years or whatever, and they've asked to die. Well, you may want to send them to you may want to reevaluate some options.
And maybe the hospital will determine that they just want to die. And
right. Maybe
give them a couple weeks to think it
absolutely.
Over, maybe.
But you wouldn't want to, but it would be a dangerous power, I would argue. Because sure, the person who's sentenced to 3 years, it may seem like the end of the world right then.
Yeah.
Right? But give them a few weeks to adapt to life in prison, as awful though it will be, and they'll realize that they can adapt, and they will get released, and they will be free again, and it's worth living for.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't want to just like, all right, well, they said they want to die, go pull it a bullet at them.
You know, it'd be even more, you know, not wasteful of time and resources is just if everyone was trained on and used and allowed to use guns, deciding to go rape someone would just be like deciding to kill yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, because I will defend myself if you, you know, try to assault me.
Another good solution to this whole death penalty thing would be to, you know, stop prosecuting victimless crimes, or as I like to call them, harmless choices. That was what I called them 4 years ago when I first ran for sheriff. I was like, I don't even like the terminology victimless crimes.
Because it's not a crime.
It's not a crime at all.
Well, right. It is a crime in the sense that it's a violation of the law, right? But it shouldn't be a crime because it's just a harmless choice.
A harmless choice. I like that.
Yeah. It's not hurting anyone. It's just a choice someone happens to make. But it's criminal in the United States for whatever bizarre, crazy reason. So if we didn't have all of those people in prison for harmless choices, things like selling pot or smoking pot or selling cocaine or smoking cocaine. Do you smoke cocaine?
You can, yeah.
No, probably not, though. You store cocaine.
I know. Yeah, the free-based kind you can smoke, I think. I've never done any cocaine.
I've never done any cocaine either. But, you know, presumably there are people in prison who have sold some or cooked some or whatever, and instead of doing that, and instead of having this apparatus where they can say, you know what, I don't want to spend 20 years in prison, just shoot me, just don't prosecute them in the first place for doing something that wasn't harming anyone. And no, society isn't their victim. They didn't harm society. Society isn't a thing that can be harmed. We're talking actual harm to individuals that can be measured and quantified and studied. You can't study harm to society. You can assume it, but you can't prove it. You can't demonstrate it. All you can say is, well, it's harmful to society for everyone to, you know, be selling cocaine, but no, is it actually harmful to society, or is the drug war harmful to society? Because we don't know the answer to that. If everyone was running around on cocaine 24/7, we really don't know what the results of that would be. Maybe they would be a good thing.
I just don't see a world where everyone would choose that. I could have done cocaine lots of times in my life, and I just was like, I don't think that I'll like that, and I didn't.
See, I didn't do it because I, based on what people have said, I know I would like it, and I would like it too much. So I've always just said, no, thank you. I don't want to do it. The same with heroin and, you know, meth sounds like something I probably wouldn't enjoy.
No,
because
no way.
I've heard too many horror stories of people, like, having what sound like anxiety attacks or psychotic episodes.
Yeah.
It's like, I have enough anxiety already without worried about, you know, UFOs landing in the spaceship and unleashing federal agents onto me, so I'm going to pass on that meth you're smoking there, but thanks for the offer, bud.
Or like there's bugs in your skin and stuff like that.
Oh, God, yes.
Like, and they scratch their skin open. Oh, that's so creepy.
Well, let's go to the phones of other people from New Mexico. We have David on the line. David, you're on Free Talk Live. And sorry, I didn't want to call you that other crazy person in New Mexico, so you're David in New Mexico. Congratulations.
How are you doing, David?
Doing great, Bonnie. Thanks for asking. Shit.
What's on your mind tonight, David?
That was an inside joke on Bonnie's part there.
Oh, thank you. I didn't catch that. I'm too stupid.
And Bonnie says the F word on the radio.
Wait, did it play on the radio?
No.
Oh.
No, just on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never ever got dumped before. It's really annoying.
We have a dumb button, and I mean, I was really quick hitting it, so there was no way it went out. I mean, you have 6 seconds to hit it, and it was in a second, maybe two at the most.
It's just annoying, because I liked being able to be like, I've never been dumped. And Captain goes, I've dumped myself a couple times.
Yeah, I have dumped myself before. I want to say someone else dumped me, but I don't remember at this point. I mean, it's something that happens at least once to everyone at some point, so.
Yeah, haven't we all been dumped?
I haven't.
No.
You have or haven't?
I haven't. Well, not on the show, but.
Would you dump Nikki?
No, I'm talking about IRL in real life.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I know that,
been dumped before then.
Jesus, man. We knew what you were talking about. We knew the joke.
Arya made the joke funnier and he didn't get it.
Went right over his head, or her head.
Anyway, what'd you call about tonight, David?
I don't blanket disagree with you and everything you said, but there was a couple things that I disagree with when you're talking about dating, whatever, dating, not dating, friends, not friends, whatever. One is there's a scenario you missed with men and women, because like I've experienced where I'm not trying to get with some girl that wants to be my friend, but I'd be interested if she was interested, but I'm not pursuing it, but having any.
Do not demand data in order to accept a person's individual perspective or to utilize that perspective in decision making. That's what they mean by data is king, evidently. You're not experiencing a glitch. I just hung up on David and went back to the article because he was rambling and not getting to the actual point that he was trying to make. And I like hanging up on David because it makes him so uniquely angry. He's actually calling back, which I appreciate because I do want to let him actually make your point. David, you're on Free Talk Live. Thank you for calling back.
Yeah, yeah, no sweat. But so it's like you don't really want to be friends with a girl that you're actually attracted to, even though you're not trying to pursue it, because it's a distraction.
That's weird.
That is so weird.
But if you're not attracted to, how is she a distraction? And what is she a distraction from?
I said you are.
He doesn't want to be.
But you're not pursuing it. You're not trying to make it happen. But you are attracted. But she's not interested. So it's a distraction to the friendship. And so it's an uncomfortable place for a dude to be. If you're interested and she's not interested, even though you're not, you know she's not interested, and you're not trying to make it happen, it's still a distraction.
I don't agree at all. I can think of it. At least a dozen girls that I'm attracted to and that I'm not pursuing, and that it's not a problem whatsoever that I find them attractive.
And right, and the key word is I. That's your personal experience. Do you think it's possible that there are other males out there, and I'm talking about males because I'm male, that see it differently than you do?
I think they should learn to control themselves a bit and not let
they should be,
not
they
let
should
their
change,
baser instincts get in the way of
they
friendship.
Who they are,
circle
Aria.
The square.
They should change who they are?
Everyone should change. Well, let me rephrase that. Everyone should work to improve themselves. And it sounds like if they can't have friendships with people that they're attracted
to,
then that's a downside. And they should improve themselves.
Wait, you said improve. That's subjective. What if other people don't agree with that? That's an improvement because it's a subjective.
I don't care if they agree or not.
It is objectively higher in consciousness to not have to think with your pants or what's inside your pants all the time, because it's just
Wait a minute. Sexuality is not in your pants. It's in your brain.
You know what the subject or the words I was trying to say, but I couldn't say them on the air.
Yeah.
Well, you do. Why not? You said the other word on the air.
But I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, I don't know, David. I've never lived my life caring what other people thought, man. And I don't think that's a very good way to live one's life. So maybe I'm the only one who thinks it's a downside. But, I mean, a psychologist would agree that a person who can't maintain healthy relationships with someone, with people of the opposite sex because they're attracted to them, has some issues they need to work out.
And I don't think women should, you know, drag men along who they can obviously tell that's the case. Like, they like me, and I just like the attention, and I'm just going to... I think that's wrong in the other way, too. It's like, you know, don't just, you know, have some compassion for the person. Let them down easy.
Like Bill and Ted said, be excellent to each other. That's really what it comes down to. Just be nice. It's Free Talk Live.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences. Too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.